We've gone from, in my first 3 years, having five players sort of on the side of the board there with another two or three spots to fill, saying, well, these five haven't really earned the right to play, but which two or three are we going to play? We've now got a spot to fill and we've got eight blokes.
Collingwood coach Nathan Buckley there. This, of course, is the Wednesday Crunch. Want a pre-owned SUV or ute? Head to suvutemegacity.com.au. We are live from Etihad Stadium for the 2015 NAB Under-18 Championships, where Tasmania trail Northern Territory, coming up to three-quarter time by 25 points. Derek Hine has joined us. He's the Collingwood recruiting chief. Good to see you, Derek. Thanks for popping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Obviously, this is a bit of a crescendo for the under-18s, but I imagine recruiting starts a lot earlier than this.
Yeah, it's this particular group's probably 3 years out now, so it's I suppose it's the culmination of 2 to 3 hard years for these guys, and obviously clubs and the recruiting staff in their planning.
How long, or what's the earliest age you'll start identifying players? Is it the under-15s?
Yeah, I think the 15s, 16s, like the 16s start next week. So most clubs will be there for multiple reasons. Clearly the Northern States with their academies there, they're heavily profiling where their particular athletes are going to sit. In terms of the rest of the competition, it's more looking at, well, it's what I call the shape of the draft. So is it a strong draft? Does it have great depth? Is it heavily slanted towards taller players? Or is it a nice season, even spread?
Decker, I got asked quite a bit about Stewart at GWS and Kelly at Adelaide, who Collingwood didn't go for father-son.
Yeah.
Can you actually take us through that process and what came about and what you had to give up to get them and why you didn't in the end?
Well, in James Stewart's situation, we'd traded. And if I take a step back from that, it's a really difficult time because you have to make an assessment on the player at the start of the trade week. So at 10 o'clock when the bell goes, you all go in and you have to make an assessment on that particular player. In that draft, or so that particular year, we were heavily into getting into the first round. So we were in the process of trading into the draft. So we were unawares of
what the
potential picks were going to have at that particular time. So if you take a step back, I think it was Brody, Tim Broomhead and Ben Kenno.
Yeah. Yep. And what about Kelly?
Yeah, Kelly was a different one. We had we were planning to only have the two early picks, and again the process has to be done at the start of the trade week. Again, we rated the draft not as strong as other clubs, so we had all intention purposes of only having the two picks in the top 10. Later in the week, so we didn't take Kelly in that particular draft. So we had made a commitment to take him in the rookie draft if he had potentially got through to there. But to get all the process going in terms of the latter picks in Langdon and Jonathan Marsh, who we didn't know we were going to be there, we had to delist Corey Galt from the senior list, because he was a contracted player, we had to redraft him onto the rookie list.
So when you say that you have to do it at the start of the trade period,
yes.
To me that sounds like you want it at a different time. When's
absolutely.
Your ideal, when's your ideal time?
If you look at this year's draft, it's going to be on the actual draft night. You make your assessment of the player on the draft night.
Yep.
Derek, you talk about strong drafts, you talk about the depth of the draft.
Yep.
And we've seen some really solid drafts over the years, but we've also seen some lean ones. How do you rate this draft?
I don't think it's as strong as other drafts, particularly the last 2 to 3 drafts. But having said that, I suppose if the clubs that are going to be picking into the top 10, it's probably a little bit unique in terms of, I see probably 70% of the first 10 would be the taller type of players, and there's a few outliers in there, guys like Sam Wiedemann and these types of guys that are young Kerner, who are both carrying injuries and may well not play. Then you've got the Mills and the Matthew Kennedys that are injured as well. So it's going to be interesting to watch.
If this is a weaker than normal draft, like everyone seems to say, what about some of the mature age players around the country? Is that any better than normal? About the same?
I suppose if you use a fishing parlance, I think a lot of it's already been fished. There is a couple of mature age players around, but in terms of the quantum, I don't think there are as many as other. I mean, everyone sees it differently.
Yep.
So from where we sit, it's not as deep in the mature age talent as
Derek, what about the training of future picks as a recruiter? The process of that and the likelihood of that happening and the willingness of clubs and recruiters to get involved in trading future picks.
There might be a few of those as well, mate. Yeah.
How do you see that playing out?
Oh, look, we're all for it. Yep. I mean, clearly, with the academy boys this year, the powers that be have created the scope for them to dip into next year's draft potentially. Yep. As well. So we're really strong, in our opinion, or our club's opinion, that we feel that opportunity should be there for all clubs. There needs to be an outrider in that. There needs to be some sort of control in terms of, so you're not selling a farm, so to speak. So a level of compliance may be, I mean, just for an example, you might be able to only trade one first round pick over a 3-year period and two second round picks over a 3-year period, and so post that's up to you.
So if you had three first round picks, you wouldn't be able to just do them in season 2016, for example?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because I think that initially, as they bedded in,
yep,
I think there really needs to be a level of compliance.
Does that include father son at the moment? So Carlton, yeah, for example, yeah, with does. Rice and Silvani,
yep,
so they may have to give up all their picks this year and their first round and second round next year,
depending on where the club, a club, bids on the player.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's all relevant to where someone bids on the player.
Do you like the system? Do you like what you're talking about, the way it sits?
I don't mind it, but I suppose it's a little bit of the unknown at the moment. All the preparation really needs to be on the player, like particularly in the four Northern Academy clubs. If you look at the Swans, for instance, they've got young Mills, Josh Dunkley. They have to make a really strong decision on both those boys. I mean, clearly they're high-end talent. You look at GWS, they've potentially got four top 20. So they may say, well, look, we'll go for the two mids. And because they've done really well with their academy players, and that they can bring the players in, create the cap room by moving players out, et cetera, et cetera.
Derek, character you were just talking about and top-end talent. Is top-end talent more important than character? And we're seeing what's going on with the Gold Coast Suns at the moment with drug issues and so forth. If you get wind that a kid's a bit of a rat bag, how much deterrent is that of a recruiter or a club picking that player up?
I mean, I think it definitely comes into everyone's focus. I suppose it's where you sit in terms of your systems and the confidence that you've got in your staff.
So someone like a Dale Gartlett, for example, he was spoken about. He was a huge risk that the Hawks couldn't turn him around. Is that a statement in itself to say that some kids you just can't get them to comply the way you'd like?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, clearly Dale had some issues off the field. And, you know, I think that the position that Hawthorn were in at the time and the systems that they had in place in terms of off field, there was probably no club better to be able to potentially take on Dale. And and we all...
Did you look at him?
We looked at him several times, but we'd always come back to that we weren't prepared to take that risk. I mean, the picks that you take are like gold, and, you know, we all make mistakes, but it's just so important that we have a player, because it's not so much, and you know better than anyone, Ox and Maxie, that when the player comes in, it's not just the pressure that what happens between 2 o'clock and 5 o'clock on a Saturday, it's the pressure to be able to maintain the list, to be able to compete day in, day out, not just on the Saturday, to hold your place on the list.
Which one did you get wrong? Which one
that was my question.
Makes you sweat at night?
Who did you, we always hear about Derek Holland, the guru, he picked Pendlebury at five and we did all this. Who do you regret? Who do you think, I knew he had something, I should have done it and I didn't do it?
The one that gives you sweats.
I know at least one of them, but I reckon there's a couple.
Oh, come away you go.
You mentioned to me Kurt Tippett, you liked him the year before.
Okay. No, well, that was an interesting one because the year before he was what they call an alternative athlete at the Australian Institute of Sport up in Canberra, and we went up there pre the draft, and Kurt's there clunking away, and Joel was there as well, his two brothers, and then I thought, oh geez, and then I rang Marty King, who works for us in Queensland, and he spoke, he'd only played the one game and thereabouts, and he was an 18-year-old at the time, and we were tossing up between Kurt and a young boy by the name of Shannon Cox from Western Australia. I mean, Shannon had elite talent, but he's one of those boys we talk about, obviously, just couldn't adapt.
Yep.
Well, maybe, well, whether he could have adapted or our SIPs and systems weren't to the level, but, I mean, clearly he was an elite talent, but, I mean, Kurt's turned out okay.
And who was the other one? Who's he? You've got to have one more.
No.
There's got to be one that you missed out on. You go,
come on, just one.
No, seriously, you caught me on the hop there.
Well, tell me this. I know famously Steel Sidebottom had an unbelievable grand final in the carnival at one stage.
Yeah.
How many bonus points can you get? If you're a young player out there and you've just, well, you know, you're a mid-range,
Marco,
if you just go ballistic in the carnival, can something magical happen in the eye of recruiters?
Oh, yeah, clearly, because you're playing the best against the best. It wasn't so much the carnival that we really rated Steele. I mean, clearly he was a high-end talent, but his final series was exceptional.
He kicked 10
in the grand final, but I think it was a game before that in the preliminary final where he virtually carried Murray across across the line, and that was the game for me. And when he kicked the 10 in the grand final, I thought, oh, that's done. He's certainly not going to get to us. But fortunately enough, he did.
Now, Derek, unfortunately, as my role as the host of the Run Home, I have to read this one out. Off Twitter, there are so many people saying at the moment that Collingwood is secretly making a play for Dangerfield. Can you clarify if you're interested in him, Aish or Treloar?
Well, it's not secret anymore, Mark. Jeez.
Just say no. Nah, Collingwood don't need him.
Just say three?
Players don't need him, do they?
I mean, I think that the list profile now, given the amount of changes that we've made, there's in excess of 3,300 games that have gone out of our club in a four-year period. We've made 45 changes in a four-year period. We're at a stage now where our list profile in terms of our age and game profile are in the bottom percentile of the competition. So we need to be really strategic and targeted in terms of the player that we attract.
Have you got room in the cap for a player like Patrick Dangerfield in 2016 and beyond?
We've got room in the cap.
Okay.
Wow.
But we have to. But at the same time, we've got some pretty handy players coming out of contract that we need to retain and keep building. And
so it's not just a matter of bringing them in. It's a matter of you thinking, well, if we do, we're probably going to lose a Broomhead or a Grundy or a Kennedy or someone like that who you were talking about.
Yeah, exactly. As I say, we've done a lot of heavy lifting in terms of what we've done with the group. And surely there were some outliers with Dane and a couple of others. But we won't be in a position where we'll just go in with a scattergun approach, if you like.
You got to pick the top three right now. Who are they in order?
In this particular
the whole. Whole country.
Oh, please, no.
One, two, three. Let's go.
No. Give away his
intel. Not in order. Well, not in order.
You wouldn't expect to be picking
one. Give us a box trifecta.
The box trifecta.
Any order.
Well, I think the three big boys, Francis, not in this order, Francis, Wiedering, those two guys. And I quite like Hopper too.
And are any of them anywhere near Jesse Hogan?
They sit at the other end of the ground. So they will probably play on Jesse Hogan.
So they're more important, Ox.
Derek, thanks for dropping by. Derek, thanks for dropping by. We appreciate it. You too, Nick. Thank you for dropping by as well.
Thanks,
of course, for Total Logistics Solutions. TLS.net.au, specialised pelletised freight.